everybody.
What?
Howdy, howdy.
Hey, good. I think it worked. Oh.
Yeah, there we go.
All right, cool. Yeah, that's good. Hey, so I don't know. You probably couldn't tell from my hilarious banter that I make in between songs, my radio show. But so do stand up and whatever. And this is another show. I don't know what we want to call it, what I'm going to call it. It's an interview show with comedians on campus. Anyway.
Happy good lucky time.
All right, yeah, happy good lucky time. That's what it'll be this week. I'm here with a comedian on campus, Div 3, Jonah Pollack. Kind of new to stand. Not that new, but like...
Yeah, like
that
9 or 10 months, yeah. Going back to like March of last year.
Cool, yeah. And we first saw it. When did you first perform with...
It was like right after spring break last year.
Cool. And what made you want to start doing that?
Something I'd wanted to do for a while. I just hadn't really sat down and tried to generate material. I also just think I didn't have the confidence to get up in front of a crowd. But I started attending crew team shows and started sort of getting the vibe of the group and just sort of seeing how people worked the crowd. And I just kind of... generated some material. Like, I don't know, all the first stuff I thought up was pretty shitty, but the, like, just pushing through brainstorming it, I got through to the other side and generated some decent stuff.
Yeah, and you did, I think. Yeah. But, like, so, yeah, because, like, what my first jokes were, like, really, not even really jokes, even, just, like the guy who OD, like, I think people OD on toothpaste. That was literally a joke I wrote. That doesn't even make sense.
Did it get a laugh?
I didn't perform it. I spent a lot of time writing before I performed anything. So it was like about in seventh grade, I wrote that joke in seventh grade. And then I performed in fourth grade. I did stand up. And then after that, it took me until I was 16 to go to an open mic. And then I went 3 times to that open mic.
And what was that? Like, that experience?
I don't know. It was not,
not fruitful?
Well, it was okay. It's just, like, a weird... Like, you're 16 and you don't understand how sad comedy is, really.
So, are you treated almost like a mascot by the other comics, or...?
Yeah, no? Kind of. I mean, they thought... I don't know if they found me funny, but they thought I was cute.
Ah, look at this kid.
Yeah.
He's gonna be depressed like the rest of us. Ah, this guy. Like,
yeah, it was a sad time. But there was like, one comedian... I don't know. It was just, like, it's a... Like, I had a joke where, you know, the people who did the, it was, I used to go to open mics all the time, in my town, and it was really awful. Like, I was the youngest person, like, the next youngest was 35, so.
Well, I mean, yeah, who's performing good open mics in Central Jersey, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like, really, they didn't relate to my jokes, I didn't
really
care about their jokes. Really, the only thing that we had in common is that we all lived with our parents.
Yeah.
That was the joke.
I mean, I went to an open mic in Somerville where it was a handful of club comics who were just doing their material. And then the other two performers were some 4-year-old guy who got up and talked about how being divorced 3 times was like putting his dick in a toaster. And then there was some pretty boy who'd come from like all the way from New Hampshire, and he had like 10 girls in the crowd who were there to see him.
Yeah, those people are not. I hate the people. I mean, yeah.
No, you can say it.
I hate the people that like bring like, you know, 12 girl. People to see, like, 12 girls to see them do a thing, and then
it's
they get
like
treated that they're funnier than they actually are.
Well, just, you look at this kid and you know he's not going to be funny.
Yeah, exactly. What was his material like? Was it like, what was it? You don't remember, it wasn't even, yeah. The dick in the toaster thing, though, that kind of has some merit. And not, I mean, it's probably has to be delivered better, but.
It's just, I think this guy had to be at least 45. I don't think it was.
Yeah,
it was not in the cards.
It was not, right? It was not. It was just a. It was more of a hate speech. Not a hate speech, but it was more like hateful and self pitying than funny. What would you say?
Yeah, it wasn't really a joke, although, I mean, again, people have all kinds of joke structures. It's just, I remember there was this guy who. Oh, what was his name? He had, like, glasses and curly hair and wore a baseball hat. He was one of the comics at the studio this summer. And he was like, eh, his material was good. It was good, solid material. But he like comes off stage. He's like, this is bullshit. Like, they look at me. They're like, we already have, there's already plenty of, you know, plenty of sad, you know, white straight men, you know, who are middle-aged. Because I think this guy was like pushing 40. He's like, yeah, it's like, yeah, now everyone wants storytelling comedy. That's the new trend. Because this guy basically told sort of one to two liner kind of observational things. Like, it's bullshit that, you know, you get stuck in line behind other people if you don't fill a certain niche. Like he was saying, now you need, you know, one of Sarah Silverman and one of Whitney Cumming and one of this and one of that.
Yeah.
There's just not, no place for the average sad white straight male in his late 30s.
I mean, I don't, I mean, yeah, how do you feel about that? Because I don't quite agree with that, I don't think. I think, you know, it's, there's,
I mean, the performers at the club were overwhelmingly
white,
sad white single men in their 30s.
Yeah. So there is a place for it.
There is a place, but not necessarily a monetized one.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah. I think did he wear like a black peacock jacket and like?
No. Oh, I think his name was Tom something maybe.
Oh, okay. Tom E. Morello? Is that it? No.
No, I'm not gonna remember, but yeah. I mean, he was a nice guy.
Yeah, no.
Chris Semple and I talked to him for a few minutes after a show.
Who?
Chris Semple.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And Chris Semple was like, "Wow, Joni, you're right. Comedians are sad people who are happy if you talk to them."
Yeah.
He's like, "Are the comedians gonna be okay if we talk to them after the show?" It's like they're just happy to have someone talk to them. Just
yeah. That's kind of. We were talking about this earlier. It's like how like after a show we don't want. We want people to be like, hey, good job, but we don't want to be noticed necessarily. It's a weird...
Yeah, it's like weird. It's like, don't tell me I'm so great or blah, 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 blah. But yeah, no, it's some weird push-pull thing where it's almost like, I don't know.
Thank you for saying that, but please, like, don't say it. Like, it
wasn't true. What I get is, we always see, like, comedians talking about, like, yeah, once you own that room, that's how you get laid. Like, after a show, you see that there was an episode of Louis where he comes off the stage and Stephen Wright is just magically in the bar at the Comedy Cellar. And Stephen Wright says, how dare you just leave? After a show like that, you own every woman in that room.
Yeah.
I don't think that's quite how it works, but...
Well, I think once you reach a certain level, you know, Stephen Wright getting owning a room, he...
No, well, he's like, well, I was like, Louis C.K. is like, well, what about you? He's like, well, I got a wife and kids. I have to take them to Six Flags tomorrow.
Yeah. Stephen Wright is great, though. I like his stuff a lot.
I guess he quietly still tours, or I know he finally released another album.
Yeah, I still have a pony, and then. Yeah, Chris Rock does a similar thing. I mean, this is cool. Hey, there's somebody outside. It's like weird. Looks like they can hear us right now.
I don't know. I mean, I think they're chopping down lots of tree stuff right now.
Yeah.
Like they're thinning the herd outside.
Yeah. But it's just weird, like, you know, talking like this and having somebody who we don't know hear us. And they probably don't even care.
No, but we're providing, you know, relaxing background for them while they chop trees.
Yeah. Hey.
Hey, guy with the blonde hair.
What's up?
Yeah, cut that wood.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was reading a book, and it said there was about this artist who used to work at a nightclub, and he just said when the comedians got off stage that they were the most hateful, angry, depressed people, and like he was like reveled how they could even be possibly kind of funny on stage. Like, because it's a weird on-stage, off-stage dynamic. Have you thought about that at all? Like, how you are off-stage relates to how you are on stage? I mean, I haven't really...
I mean, I feel like the second I get off-stage, I'm just behaving like a Asperger's-y person. Like, I'm just kind of face goes blank. I'm just kind of, like, with the blinders on. I don't know. I mean, definitely... me on stage is like, I mean, I guess nasty and confrontational, but in kind of a muted way, like a kind of low wattage nastiness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how about, would you say you're nasty off stage? mean-spirited, no. Self-destructive.
I mean, I'm kind of self-destructive, but...
Give it time.
Yeah, I don't think I'm nasty.
You're not going to be like Freddie Prinze Jr. and be like high on cocaine shooting guns everywhere.
Nah. Not with the amount of money that I'm making right now from comedy. Can't afford any guns or cocaine or anything, really. Can't afford anything. Not that I make a living off...
off comedy, but...
Comedy.
Yeah. He spent all of his monitor money on cocaine and guns.
Yeah. No idea. I spend it all on... I spend a lot more money on beer than I probably should. But.
You know, I realized that I spent a shit ton on beer last semester, and then this semester I've, like, managed to just spend very little. And
Yeah. Well, that $10 case that they...
Yeah, that's...
That was great. But, that was... Yeah, it's weird being off stage and not... And, like, trying to perform for me. Like, I feel almost... Not guilty, but I feel like, you know... It's kind of... I feel like I'm always bombing when I'm off stage when I say something and nobody laughs. I don't know. Just like... Like, even, like, so when I say, like, can I have... Or, like, you know... You know, can... Is... You know... That'll be cash at a store. Like, I'm paying cash. And it's like... Thank you. Like, what? Why didn't you laugh at thank you? You know, I feel weird like that. But
I don't know. I think checkout people tend to be pretty glazed over. I don't know.
Oh, no, I'm just using that as kind of an example of, like...
I mean, this summer when I worked at the bookstore, mm-hmm. and we were doing intense register duty, like, the last few weeks, I would, like, chat up the customers, but that was, like, just my sanity crutch. From just doing thousands and thousands of books just over the scanner.
Yeah. And I know, yeah, so you just, like, got in, like, a daze about it, right? And it's like... When I worked at the door at the comedy studio, it's, like, so panicky for me. It's just, like, when people... Like, is it, like, $7 a ticket, right?
They raised it to 8 during the week, and I think it's 12 on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, like, when people gave me less than the exact amount, I was so horrified about change. And, like, I think I did it correctly, but I don't know. I remember one time Rick was counting the money, and I just heard him under his breath go, again? And I didn't want to be like, did I mess up? But I may have.
Badly
I stopped working the door.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, like, basically on, like, chair duty and table duty, and then occasionally he had me fetch drinks. I think he knew I wasn't a great laborer, but...
Yeah. I know, I was he soon found out about me, doing that. Did you go to... When you were doing the open... You did, like, two open mics.
Yeah,
right?
I did one... I did Grandma's Basement,
right.
And I did, I think it was Tavern at the End of the World.
Mm-hmm.
In Grandma's Basement, it was shitty, but at least, like, there was a crowd,
mm-hmm.
and people were watching.
Yeah.
The Tavern at the End of the World thing, which was the place in Somerville, was just a shit show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was no one there. The people who were there all left the room when it wasn't their turn. Everyone was cutting out. And I said it was just weird to see these people who were studio comics who would just go up and do their Saturday night material to an empty room verbatim. And then, like, the guy with the dick in the toaster thing, and that the pretty boy from New Hampshire. And I got up, I had the bit about the realism, modernism, postmodernism thing,
mm-hmm.
but I just brainstormed it the previous day, so I didn't have any punchlines or any real structure. It was just an idea, and I just wanted to get up on stage and try and recite it. So I'm here in this room full of people who have no idea who I am, who have no idea what I'm talking about, with no joke structure. I'm just up on the mic for 3 or 4 minutes trying to, like, just find my way through this, like,
but it's to nobody, really. It's
no one will remember, but it's just, oh, it was just so brutal. Like,
I know. Well, you remember. It's, like, the worst part about it. It's, like, it's almost, because, like, I feel like a lot of people who perform are so self-critical about what they themselves do. Like, even, like, it's easy in the audience to just, you know, it's a much different relationship where it's like, okay, I did this, or okay, I saw that in the audience, as an audience member, and then on stage, you're like, I did not deliver that well. Like, you still laugh, but it's still like, I feel like I cheated you now. And then, like, you know, there's the guilt there.
Do you remember the first time you just straight up bombed?
Yeah, that was awful. I mean, it's...
That was in New Jersey?
Yeah. I mean, it was in my house at a party.
Oh.
With my family friends who invited me, who we invited over specifically so I could do a show.
They just stared politely or not even politely?
They laughed politely a little bit, and then... And it was recorded. That's also awful. I still have that tape. Which I've listened to it a couple of times, and like I feel like the jokes are there, kind of, but it's still really bad. Just like at one point I took my shirt off.
Are you literally performing for like a couple?
This was three couples and my high school friends, and my high school friends got the biggest laughs by heckling me.
How much time did you do?
About 15 minutes.
15 minutes. So you can you hear the cigarette smoke and the dropped glasses on the tape?
Yeah. Yeah. Even that they're not there. You just hear like you can hear all of my neighbors trying to be really polite. Just like
But you didn't verbally harass them?
No, that's the thing. Like, even if you get heckled by somebody you know, you can't attack them because then you just come off.
Well, that's the whole thing here with Hampshire. Where even though we're on stage and go off stage, half the people in the audience are friends or friendly acquaintances. Yeah. Where it's just not that effective performing to total strangers.
Yeah, and well, yeah, you're right. It's
I mean, the first show of the semester, I don't think I really knew anyone there aside from, like, the people from your mod.
Yeah.
And then maybe, like, some of the natural disaster people, but...
Yeah, or the show at the tavern where we literally knew nobody. Like, none of our friends showed up to the show.
I mean, the 67... I mean, like, Mika and Lizzie and people like that were there, no? Or...
Maybe Mika was. I didn't see Lizzie... Or Aaron or Abigail. That was what made it such kind of a weird. It was like maybe like three or four of our friends, and then everybody else was a complete stranger. And it was the night when like nobody really had anything quite prepared, and they were just like, "I'm gonna be weird." It's the night when Michael Capitaparo took the wrench out of his pants, which was great. It's like, but.
Oh, by the way, there's a show Friday, right?
Yeah, I'm emceeing, I think.
So I realized I didn't sign up yet, but
yeah,
kept me in.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
You're in?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I'm figuring out what to do with that show. I think I'm going to be doing a lot of auditions this week, but just doing like a stand-up set to get ready for that show. Like, I don't really want to get into the things that I'm auditioning for. But it's just like that it's an opportunity to perform.
Well, when you say you're auditioning, what do you mean?
Like there's like a...
The McDonough play. The Pillow Man thing?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of want to... Do you know anything about that play?
I haven't like looked it up yet, but definitely, I mean, just hearing Mike talk about the McDonough stuff, it sounds very interesting.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm kind of into that. And I feel like I have to get... better at acting a little bit. I had a meeting with somebody this morning who wants to put me in their film.
Who is it?
I think his name's Michael. I don't know his last name. But he's making a movie next spring. We had a meeting today and he asked me to...
So like he just has gone to crew team shows? Or how does
he
know?
No, he saw me read a script for like an Intran meeting.
Oh.
And, I mean, I kind of want to do it, and I said I would do it, but I'm also kind of like, I want to be challenged, but I also feel like when I do that, I'm not going to be that good, really, I feel like.
For me, I was shitty in rehearsals with Mike's play until the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then it actually came out all right, so you never know.
I know. I mean, I just get really nervous about that stuff. Perform like I was doing Grimcross. Like I hope I don't like I.
Were you asked to be in that, or did you audition?
I
just realized I was squishy.
Yeah.
Playing with your earphones. I'm sorry. That was like compulsive squishing a squishy thing.
Yeah. No, I saw that. I should. Yeah. It's fine. fuggies are my.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. There's like, are those noise canceling?
No, but they cancel out a lot of noise just by how thick they are, and they're pretty good. They're really good sound quality. I mean, you listen to them.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. The other day, yeah, they're pretty good.
But yeah, it's just like it's a weird thing of like I want to do more things, but I kind of want to do them on my own terms, but you can't really do them on your own terms, and also it's just really good to take advantage of a thing like this in such a closed community.
Yeah, no, develop working relationships.
Yeah. Yeah, so I might do some plays, I might not. I don't know. It depends on how I feel. That's kind of how I do comedy, too. It's like, how do I feel about this joke? I like it. But I think the audience might not like it. I'm still
but it's ultimately your confidence in the joke will sell it. Like, you can have a joke that you think the audience will like, but you hate it, and that can totally bomb it.
Right.
Like the other day, I thought of this joke where I know... I mean, right now, it's sort of like the premise of the story, and I have the sort of, like, money moment of images, and I'm trying to think of how exactly I'm going to frame it.
Mm-hmm.
But I know people are like, oh, yeah, but that's really fucked. Like, when I went home to my house the other day, I realized that it looked like a fucking massacre had taken place there. It was in the middle of being cleaned up. Like, it looked like 1,000 people had been shoved through the mud, and now they were trying to make it look like they were in the middle of making it look like 1,000 people had never been there, like it was, like, a war crime site. And then how, like, the previous night, like, when I swam my way down through the mud, it was literally, like, just everyone was, like, crammed in and disoriented. And, like, I swam my ring through just, like, a pile of bodies. It was, like, you know, Birkenau, the dub remix.
Oh, man. Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah. I just imagine, like, you know, girl, like, floating through, like, just the crowd of bodies going with Keith Howard.
Yeah, that was when you tried to go to sleep there, right? And then you ended up coming.
Oh, I wasn't going to sleep. I just went in my room for a little bit to, like, grab some things. But when I came out, it was literally just, it was just a three-story pile of bodies.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take you to walk in, grab your stuff, and walk out?
Just to get from the door of my room down to the bottom stairs, it took like 5 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know, it took me like 20 minutes to leave. It's insane. It was sort of fun. I mean, it was kind of, I liked how we had our corner of like people who didn't want to dance.
But you know, they broke a hole in the wall. In
yeah.
The corner.
No, I know. I heard about that from Leanna. It was awful. I don't know how that happened. Obviously, I left before that.
Because there was, like, hundreds of people crammed in there like a fucking gas shower.
I know. How bad is the hole?
I mean, the hole's not that bad. And like I said, now things are cleaned up.
Uh-huh.
Like, if you had seen it on Sunday, like, 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock.
You would have been.
It looked like, as like I said, like, 1,000 people had been violently brought through there, like, to be massacred. Like,
wow.
You see, like, 1,000 footprints on the ground, mm-hmm. and, like, the place just looked roughed up, like. I think, like, one of the things I think I want to do in, like, this joke I'm thinking of is, like, the idea of, like, the DJ being brought up before, like, you know, the war crimes tribunal for his complicity, you know.
Cool. Yeah. So it's, like, the DJ is being tried as a war criminal?
You know, for complicity. You know, the same way that, like,
right.
a guard at, like, a concentration camp would be tried. It's like, did you compel people to shake their booties? Like,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
We have here your iPod shuffle playlist or something like that.
Yeah, that could work. It's like, yeah, because how do you generate ideas?
I just feel like I have, like, some really messed, like, I have just some image or some observation. Mm-hmm. And from there, I have to hammer that out into the rhythm of, like, a story.
Cool.
Like, I stumbled into my mod. I'm like, holy shit, this looks like a massacre took place here. And then I saw one of my other mod mates, Randy. And, yeah, I just told him, like, the thing of, like, just floating down through the pile of bodies and just, like, someone floating through the thing going with Keith Howard. And then I just had this image of, like, yeah, that it was, like, some kind of crime against the party was almost a crime against humanity. And, like, now it, like, it literally had to be covered up like it never happened.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a cool... That's a cool observation, that a lot of parties are crime against humanity. I like that line a lot.
But again, that's like an image in search of a rhythm.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a really cool way of putting it. Yeah, I'm not sure how I generate stuff. I mean, I will sometimes just go on stage with nothing and then generate
and
ideas that way. And then it's up to me to refine them, but because of the such enclosed areas of of performing in stand-up here, you can't really refine things, so it's just like...
You know, you get like two passes at something. So.
Yeah. So like, you get like a... So you have to kind of make a kind of a rhythm or a character out of the way that you approach material, I think. So that's what I sort of do, and that's kind of how I'm even sort of evolving now. It's just like much more loose and let's see where this goes. But then, you know, it's the hard thing of like figuring out where to make it sharp and where it can linger a little bit.
I've done a little bit of improv on mic, but definitely like I need a little bit of a framework to at least have somewhere from which to jump off of. Definitely there's also a thing where just material gets too rote and you're just reciting it. Like the first open mic I did with one of my bishops, I took material from that first open mic I did, or not open mic, I guess the showcase, because it is, Crouton is a showcase. And I feel like I just sort of recited out those jokes with very little feeling. He's kind of rote at the bishops crowd who had no context for what I was doing, and I just got stared at like a deer in the headlights. And I just remember like, I felt like raped. Like, ooh, this just feels awful. And then I'm like, oh. And I bombed for the first time, and I survived.
So. Yeah, it's not... Bombing isn't that bad, depending on who's in the audience.
And I think, like, the worst is, like, that Somerville show where people aren't even paying attention.
Right.
Like, at Bishop's and at the Grandma's Basement, people at least pay attention, so you're doing a show.
Yeah. And the, I hate... That was part of when I was at Here's to the Arts, which was the place where I first did open mics in my town.
This was like a community theater?
No, it was a performance venue called Here's to the Arts, founded by two guys named Art. It's a pun, Here's to the Arts. But then right before it opened, they had a huge falling out, so there was only one Art there.
So it's just Here to the...
Here to the Art. Hear one Art. I don't know. It was not.
Let's hear it for Art.
Yeah, let's hear it for Art. That would be a good name for the store. Let's hear it for Art. It was like a bar, but it was just a depressing, sad. It was like one time I performed. Like, actually, the weird thing that's gotten laughs throughout since I was 16 is when I will try to. I still have kind of the same idea of like, going on with loose ideas and seeing what happens, and then the laughter, if it happens, happens in the moment, I guess, or it happens because it's almost like an after fact of the material. I don't, but one thing that's solidly gotten a laugh for me is like whenever I take out my set list, it always gets a laugh. Like if I hide it and then take it out, because it's like, oh, was that like stuff that he was performing? I mean, was that like stuff, like his first stuff that bombed horribly, was that stuff that he actually thought he was going to do? And then I take it out, like, oh, I guess it was. But
do you ever write a joke to, like, meta-bomb?
Not really. I mean, I hate bombing. And that's, like, one of the things that gets really hard, especially the way that I want to perform now, which is, like, playing with audiences' expectations, like, kind of an excuse to do that, but it still feels weird when you meta when you're
pulling Andy Kaufman, where like you don't want to laugh, you want the audience to go what? Yeah,
right. I mean, I don't think I want to do that much. I want to make like the audience squirm a little bit, but I don't want. I mean, because it's like a bad show is a bad show, and even if you're making it bad on purpose, then it's just bad without you're trying. It's bad. Without you trying to gain anything from it. It's just kind of a waste of show.
Where you did like a, like, you know, like those like one man shows, or say one woman shows by like Carrie Fisher and like Joan Rivers, where it's like me and my life. And you like talk about your plastic surgeries and your drug addictions and all the men. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, I could. Yeah. That would be fun.
Do just like an be like an old dame, like talk about all of your plastic surgeries.
Yeah. Well, the thing that I'm trying to do, it's not so much to bomb, but it's to find context between bombing and killing, I guess. I don't know if that might be kind of a cool way of putting it. I'm not
sort of like the dynamic between harsh reactions as opposed to just
kind of like
down the middle, kind of.
Yeah, kind of like, okay, I've prepared this, you know, beat, laugh, beat, laugh, beat, laugh, you know. I don't want to do that. It's more like...
laugh, shudder, laugh, shudder.
Yeah. Laugh, shudder, yeah. Exactly. But, oh, we just lost connection. So we are not broadcasting.
Not even to the kind folks outside who are cutting our trees?
I think, no, we are. They're hearing us on the speakers, possibly, I think. But...
are we still recording? We were recording the
we
whole
time. We are recording. We've been talking for half an hour.
Is this your red,
that's
white, and blue guitar?
That's a pick I found on the ground. I think I'm going to use it and pick up guitar.
Pick up guitar?
Pick up guitar, start learning how to play guitar.
Oh, like picking up, yeah, yeah. You're going to play Tom's guitar?
Maybe, yeah. I don't know. Have you played guitar?
I got in high school, like in 8th, 9th, and 10th grade, I played this like Fender Squire. Mm-hmm. And I took lessons, and I don't know if, like, I was playing it wrong or I wasn't practicing hard enough, because certainly it was a little bit of each of those. And it wasn't like I had zero ability, but I didn't have a great amount of ability. And I felt like if the real natural ability had been there, I would have...
proceeded more.
Well, I just pursued it more. It would have been more apparent, and I would have progressed more. And then it's like, you know, it would have been like an exponential thing. You progress more, you pursue more, you progress more, you pursue more. Uh-huh. And so I kind of let it fall by the wayside, and I've always felt really shitty about it. Like, if I had just made a little bit of headway each year, mm-hmm. ever, you know, since I first took it up, I actually might be in a pretty good place with it by now.
Yeah.
But.
Cool. Yeah, I wish I could play. I can't. I mean, you can play chords, like, a G to an E to a D.
I suck, though, at transitioning from C to anything or from anything to C. I don't get how people do non-bar C chords in, like, the context of other non-bar chords,
because
it's just so much space covered, so far away from what, like,
yeah,
like the C chord is like a step ladder across the like entire upper part of the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like index finger, middle finger, and yeah, just all. For those of you on the radio, you can totally see this. No, definitely bar chords, power chords.
Cool. Yeah, no, I tried to like play guitar once and it's not.
Oh, it just fucking kills you. Like the first month your hand muscles are just adjusting.
Yeah, I quit after 2 weeks, but I did buy a guitar. So it's a 2 week $400 investment.
Was sitting at home like in the basement or something?
Yeah, some of the strings still work. I still play it. Like I can play noise out of it. I just put like the overdrive on and just like play like open chords. And it's so out of tune now that it doesn't really play. Like you can't really hear
it. Oh, what type of guitar is it?
It's a Fender.
Do you like the Squire Strat thing?
Maybe. I'm not sure. It's a lefty guitar, which means that it's basically... They market it as a lefty guitar, but it's really just the strings are reversed.
Oh, so it's like Jimi Hendrix style, where he has...
Well, he played the guitar upside down.
Yeah,
didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this is the opposite of that. So it would be like if you...
Oh, it's like a normal guitar.
It's normal order, yeah. It's just, for the opposite side.
It's funny, I always used to think Telecasters were for pansies. And then, like, I realized at some point, no, Telecasters are awesome.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of really great guitar work has gone down on Telecasters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I actually played guitar, I think the guitar I'd want to be, like, the Telecaster Deluxe.
Cool.
It's like the Telecaster with, like, the humbucker pickup things, like mm-hmm. the big fat.
Yeah. I could not play guitar. I would like to smash
a guitar.
A guitar. Like, if somebody, like, wanted... If any bands want a random person to come on stage and smash a guitar, I could do that. Like, that would be a job I could do. It's not a job I would necessarily... I mean, I don't like destroying musical instruments, but...
Well, that was like the whole... You know the whole thing with Pete Townsend, where Pete Townsend was like an art student, and like, there's this guy, Gustav Metzger.
I'm sorry, hang on, I'm getting a phone call from my friend from home. Hey, Ben, can I call you? Hey, how are you?
Not to worry.
I'm in the middle of a radio interview show. Can I put you back in about half an hour? Okay, cool. I'll call you. Yeah.
Yeah, when are you busy after the class? I could probably call you in the evening as well. Okay, cool. I will call you around 9:30. All right. Thanks.
All right. See ya. All right. Bye.
What were we talking about? We were talking about.
You were talking about Pete Townsend. Oh, like there was this art school.
There was like this like Holocaust like survivor dude whose like whole thing was destructo art. Mm-hmm. Like the whole thing was like, real art is when you take things and destroy them. And then Yoko Ono was one of like the disciples of this guy.
Oh,
like,
okay.
So his whole thing was like, we will smash our guitars and it will be a statement about consumer products because the electric guitars come off an assembly line.
Oh, okay. That's, I mean, but it's still like you're destroying tons of money.
They talk about how like the Who, one of the reasons they were broke when by the time they made Tommy, they were literally on the verge of financial ruin.
Yeah.
Because they spent 4 years destroying their instruments while not actually making that much money.
I know.
Like between the electric guitars and the drum kits,
mm-hmm.
thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, like all of their profit basically went to paying for destroying their instruments and destroying their hotel rooms.
Oh, man. And they, yeah. Well, why did they destroy their hotel rooms?
Because Keith Moon was insane.
Yeah, okay.
That's a reason.
It's also fun.
Yeah. Is it really?
Yeah, it'd be fun to destroy. I mean, not it's fun to... To trash things to the point where they're fixable.
But I'm like, you've seen that footage of like the Rolling Stones in the 70s, like throwing like a television like 10 stories down.
Yeah, out of their hotel.
Yeah,
into the parking lot, or is it?
I think it's into like a plateau where there's like a lower level of the hotel that juts out, so it falls on like an awning.
Yeah,
but it's like, yeah, that's just so fucked up. Like,
I mean,
last year, some people tried to burn a television in the woods during Jan term, I think it was.
Oh, man.
Like, after one of the big snowstorms, like, why don't we drag the TV out, kick it around, and then light it on fire?
Mm-hmm.
Was not successful.
What about comedians who trash their hotel rooms? Like, I would love to.
Is that a thing?
Like, you just, like, you destroy the mic at the end of a show, or, like, you would not.
Isn't that, like, the ultimate dick thing to do, though, to the other comedians?
Yeah. No, I know. It would be. I mean, I don't even think, like, you'd have to be, like, the closer. Like, you'd have to be at, like, Who level rock star comedy.
Remember the thing, there's a Sklar Brothers bit where they're talking about Andrew Dice Clay. Goes on before them at a club. It's like he does his 15 minutes and he goes on for about 45.
Yeah.
And then when he leaves, he drops the mic, breaking it. Like,
yeah, that guy is not. I would not like to. I mean, I attack the microphone sometimes in my shows, but never to. It's always to get a reaction from Michael Capitafaro, who's in the audience, like,
and
which I think has become a theme.
Oh, attack! Like literally attacking the mic.
Not attack it, but, like, knock over the mic stand or, you know, just, like, do something to, like, get his attention of, like, he's enjoying the show. He's, like, and then the work part of him goes, like, I work at media services. Why are you doing that? And, I mean, I just think it's funny, too.
Well, Rick was talking about how after Dane Cook, there's a whole phenomenon of guys who think they have to, like, spit into the mic.
Oh, man. Does Dane Cook spit into the mic?
He just... fucking salivates all, like, he's just, like, there's foaming at the mouth when he's speaking. It just sparks of saliva.
Oh, man. Ugh, I would hate to go on after somebody who did that. I'm so germophobic with saliva. Like, even the word.
Yeah, so Rick was saying how it's, like, there's just all these things of just, like, basic etiquette that people should know. Like, don't pull a Dane Cook and salivate all over the mic.
Yeah.
Did you ever see that packet, the information packet thing he had prepared for, like, people interested in getting on at the club?
No, I don't think he had that when I was there.
Oh. Yeah, and it was the whole thing. It was, like, basically, like, are you thinking about comedy? Well, know that we have these expectations. It was, like...
Mm-hmm. It was just, like, the basic etiquette. That's good. Never go on past your time.
It's, like, yeah, no, be dressed right, be on time.
What does be dressed right mean?
Pants and preferably like a decently nice shirt, like especially if you're working the weekend.
Pants. You mean just wear pants in general?
Like he was saying that there was this one crazy performer who's like, the guy's not going anywhere. He's just like a local character.
Yeah, local guy.
And he just kind of is there haunting the background of like the Boston comedy community. and like he shows up in shorts and does a set, and his opener is talking about wanting to come on people on the bus. And then Rick says how he comes up to him and he's like yelling at him. He's like, that was just not right. Like, that was a really like bad set, like yada yada yada. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh wait, so what you're telling me is I should wear pants. Like, yes, you should wear pants.
That's a bold opener. Like, that's like the opener. I mean, that's like an opener that, like, I know what we're in for in that opener.
That's
I would enjoy that set. I mean, I wouldn't enjoy being him or even as a member of the audience enjoy it, but I would if I was a comedian. I mean, and I, you know, watching that show, I would enjoy it. Like, that guy is, why did your opening that is, like, hilarious.
Wrong.
Did he tell you about the guy who peed in his pants?
No, this was deliberate.
Yeah, that was his joke. He just went on stage and started peeing. Also, and then he said like, and then he may have said, "Please kill me" or something. I don't think it's just like, and then he just walked off stage, and he could nobody in the audience or none of the comedians could decide if that was like the most genius thing they've ever seen or like the saddest.
It
goes with intention, really. It's what's your
yeah. I mean, you're not going to get a television show because you peed your pants.
No, but you get a lot of YouTube hits.
YouTube hits. I mean, you might, I guess, be invited to a French festival. Yeah, maybe the French. Yeah, they love. Yeah, isn't ping a French thing or is that a German thing? Oh no, the German thing is the fart thing. No, I mean, but like the like Germans have like fart porn, or like the shit porn. Do you feel like German Scheiser porn? Or
I stay away from that. I've not heard.
I mean, I haven't actually seen it, but I just heard the expression. Wait, French ping porn. Let's Google this and see if this is a thing.
We can just say it's German. It's just
or French pee porn site. French pee by car. Pissing points. I don't know. Apparently it is.
It seems like a fetish for all countries.
But I searched French ping porn and I got 18,400,000 results.
Wow. What about German ping porn or American ping porn? Or
let's see. German ping porn. Oh, German ping porn, 22 million.
That's more than the 18.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scheiße. Yeah, German. Yeah, European. Oh, here we have European pornography.
The Wikipedia page.
The Wikipedia page, so you know it's factually accurate. Mm-hmm. Early years of Germany pornography began with softcore films. And eventually, Scheiße porn, using the slang term for feces, supposedly is particularly popular in Germany with companies like SG Video and performers like Austrian Veronica Mauser or English Ben Chambers specializing in the concept. Although German companies have their fair share, world market share producing this niche market, the major percentage is sold into export because foreign people want to see German shit on each other. I guess.
Huh.
I don't know.
Weird. No, good. I mean, it's good to know.
Good to know. You know what your mom is getting for Mother's Day.
God.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Whoa.
Your mother's an experimental filmmaker, right?
She's a independent filmmaker. It's somewhat experimental, but it's more confessional, I would say. Then experimental.
So if you gave her German Scheiße porn, she'd just be like, this seems impersonal and also the lighting is bad.
No, she'd just be extremely offended and confused as to why I gave it to her. And we'd both feel pretty uneasy about it. And like
I'm not recommending.
No, I know. I'm just trying to think of what would happen if I... It would just not. I mean, what would happen if you gave your mom that? Like, what would
she think it was some kind of sick joke?
Yeah, no, my mom would probably too, but she wouldn't enjoy the sick joke. She wouldn't. and she would just like.
What did your mother say about her time at Hampshire?
She liked it. She was here in the 70s, so it was 77 to 81 or 76 to 80, I think.
So that's like after Frisbeegate?
I don't know. When was Frisbeegate?
I don't remember. I just remember sometime in the 70s, and that it was like a publicity scandal for the school, because even though like the guy did real work, mm-hmm. and actually became successful, he became like some sort of millionaire.
Oh, the Frisbeegate.
Yeah. He became like a millionaire toy entrepreneur, and he actually took like an interesting variety of classes.
Yeah.
And he was like an older student, but like there was an article about it that was just like, yeah, this guy studies Frisbee, and apparently it was like a major, because it just portrayed, it made the school sound like a joke. Let's see, Hampshire.
Yeah. No, I know, I've heard about that. Actually, Ultimate Frisbee was invented in my town, in the town where I grew up. And then I came here where it kind of took off, too, so it's a weird relationship I have to Ultimate Frisbee.
Wait, so how old is it technically?
I think it was invented in the 60s. In the Columbia High School parking lot.
Oh, I mean, it's basically, it's football with a frisbee, basically.
Yeah, and it's non-contact.
You ever seen...
It's an awful game.
Yeah.
It broke up my band.
Who sided with Ultimate Frisbee?
The bass player and the guitarist.
So.
And I was the only other member, so.
Oh, you didn't have, like, a second guitarist or a keyboard player to side with?
No, we could have kept on going if we had that, but we, nope.
It's Ultimate Frisbee.
The pubes are no more. The
pubes.
Yeah.
You ever seen the Red Scare's, like, nude calendar?
Yeah.
It's very tastefully done.
It is. I'm impressed by how tastefully.
Yeah.
Are we at the end of our rope on this? I don't know.
Are we running out of gas?
I feel a little bit like I am, but I don't know. How do you feel?
I mean, it is coming up on 4, so we've done close to an hour.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, we can stop here.
Save it for posterity.
Save it for posterity. Listen to some podcasts. Podcast this. But we should podcast this.
But do you know, like, at all about the process of, like, uploading stuff for podcast?
No, I don't really. I mean, I don't even think, yeah.
I'm not saying we literally would podcast this. I just imagine it. At this point, it must be increasingly user-friendly.
Oh, yeah, no. It's very easy to do, I think. You just GarageBand. It's hard to get it noticed. There's so many podcasts out there. Like, there's literally billions of podcasts. Out there. That's a lie. There's millions.
And what's called, Maxime will be here tomorrow.
Oh,
so
cool.
So he'll probably want to do some yurt.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Do you ever guest on his show with Henry at all? Or?
No, but I think we could, that would be a fun. Is he here on Wednesday also?
Yeah, no, I think he's leaving like Thursday morning or afternoon. So he's going to be here for like 48 hours.
Okay,
and I imagine a certain amount of that time will be spent with Abigail having fun times, but...
Uh-huh.
When he's not with Abigail, he'll, I guess, be doing comedy stuff? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. He'll definitely make his round. I'll try to say hey to him.
Mm.
And, yeah, you should.
Is he always on?
He's on when he's not sleeping, I think. Even maybe when he is sleeping.
In his dreams, he's in character.
Yeah. It's incredible how he does that. I think we talked about like this before, but like how like I'm never on, even when I'm on stage, I don't even think I'm really on. And when like, I don't know, how do you feel?
I feel like there's the part of me which just compulsively tries to interject punchlines into conversation.
Uh-huh.
And it's the type of thing where I was reading something, it was the chapter on Mort Saul in the Seriously Funny book.
Oh, right.
And aside from the fact that everyone was talking about how everyone in the comedy community hated Mort Saul and he was an egomaniac, they're like, ugh, he was always on. It was just so annoying. And I feel like sometimes I'm just like, it's not even like a conscientious thing. I'm just like interjecting shtick into conversation. And like, you get laughs, but then you also get like when, you know, we're into a 2-hour practice and Lizzie Durrell is like, ugh, all right already, Jonah, you know.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. We are, definitely. We can go out with a song.
Is it cool?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is I Don't Want to Go to Chelsea by Elvis Costello and the Attractions. And this is live from 1978. So just let it rip.
Yeah, let it.
At 6 to 6, he thinks of all the lips that he licks and all the girls that he's going to fix. She gave a little bit, gave herself a little cuddle in the sunless jet. Met him in a skirt and waddle, gave a shirt and a slip. She was last, she was a model. They call it a dancing when she looks like herself. I don't want to go to Chelsea. Oh, no, does not move me. Even though I've seen the movie, I don't want to check your pulse. I don't want nobody else. I don't want to go to Chelsea. Everybody's got new artists. Being that's gonna kiss the waters. And now the teacher is away. All the kids begin to play. Dressed in white coat, shaking very gently by the throat. One's named Gus, one's named Elsie. I don't want to go to Chelsea. Oh, no, that's not fair. Even though I've seen the movie, I don't want to check your pulse. I don't want nobody else. I don't want to go to Chelsea. At 6 to 6, he thinks of all the lips that he licks and all the girls that he's a gone to fix. She gave a little bird, gave herself a little cuddle, met the snowflake chef, met him in a skirt and waddle, got a duck in a string. She was last, she was Bible. They call her the dancing when she looks like Elsa. I don't want to go to Chelsea. Oh no, that's not fair. Even though I've seen the movie, I don't want to check your pulse. I don't want nobody else. I don't want to go to Chelsea.